Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
The snow glows white in Lambeau tonight, not a footprint to be seen. We need some new coordination for our boys in gold and green. Rumors were swirling when it started to be a trend. Then we lost to Tommy DeVito and his little agent friend. Baker Mayfield, don't let them see your passer rating, 158.3. Don't let them run, don't let them throw. Our defense blows.
Fire Joe, can't do this crap anymore. Fire Joe, send him out and slam the door. I don't care what LeFleur will say. Why drag this on? It's gonna happen in 3 weeks anyway.
Welcome to episode 154 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's the whole family for episode 154. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Arnesham Builders. Last time 54 was Larry McCarron. Peter, are we going to have a 54 this time around?
We're going to leave it at Larry McCarron last time. So no 54 this time.
Slim pickings for some of these numbers. You're gonna really have to dive into the memory banks. All right.
Fortunately, we'll eventually get back to the 80s where, you know, number 80, 81, 82. There'll be loads of those guys.
Exactly. Questions from friends. Eric from Greendale asks, do you think the lack of an elite wide receiver helps or hinders the Packers offense? Todd, let's start with you.
We already have them. Yeah, you know, we have elite receivers.
Oh.
So I don't think this is a question. Yeah. I don't think there's a lack of an elite receiver. We have Christian Watson. We have Dobbs. We have Wicks. I mean, it's deep. I think those three, and I think you could probably put Wicks at two over Dobbs.
And you're saying that they're elite.
I'm saying, yeah, well, okay. Yeah, so you got me. I'm saying Christian Watson is potentially an elite. Okay. I don't think he's gotten there. Based on the injuries this year, I think if he would have, yeah, been healthy this year, we would have seen that. But I think he is a potential cast of players who can reach that level right behind him.
Okay. Peter, your thoughts?
I don't think so, other than perhaps in the red zone, where I think the Packers have settled for a few too many field goal attempts, or had to settle for a few too many field goal attempts than touchdowns. I don't want to call it elite, but not having an outright number one, because different guys have stepped up every week. So whether, you know, who is the number one receiver on the Packers roster depth chart wise? Watson, Dobbs, it could be, you could name any of Wicks, Reed, Watson, Dobbs, it doesn't matter. And I think not having an out and out number one in that regard, I think has actually helped the Packers. I think it's helped Jordan Love's development, not having to keep that number one guy happy, not having him as a featured guy when you start throwing to him when perhaps you shouldn't. I think that's actually helped. Want to see, and I think we will see, is these guys just continue to progress. And when we go into next season, you know, they're going to take another step forward. It could be an elite group.
Eric, thanks for the question. This is from Ashley from our Twitter group. Will the Packers extend Aaron Jones with a new contract? And then also, what happens with A.J. Dillon? Do you mind if I answer this question? I think that what you saw on Christmas Eve was what Aaron Jones does for this offense. I do believe you need to extend Aaron Jones. I know that Aaron Jones is old as far as running backs go. I will say, though, that because he hasn't been used all that much, there's still tread on those tires compared to running backs that are his age. He hits the hole like no other Packer does. I think you need to extend him, and I think you need to not make him take a Packer-friendly deal. He's done that every time. Now, I understand he's an old running back and you don't want to handicap your franchise with a guy that might not play two more years, but I think you extend him. You put him under contract for two more years and you make it good for everybody else. As far as AJ Dillon goes, he's just a guy. I think you need to draft the next Aaron Jones, the next dynamic guy. And if AJ Dillon wants to come back on a real bad Packer-friendly contract, that's the only way I bring AJ Dillon back.
I think I agree with most of what you say. I think Aaron Jones' best point that you brought up is like his, hasn't been overused. There's still tread on the tires. I think that there's two or three years left in there. I think Aaron Jones as a person is a Green Bay Packer. I don't think he wants to go anywhere. But again, like you said, from an organization standpoint, like you got to give this guy, he's also sacrificed like his career and like everything to like stay there and be loyal. That's got to be rewarded at some point. Would I deal him? No. I mean, that dude looks jacked. I don't know what you saw on Sunday, but I was like, and that guy, his arms and shit are just like, this guy is like at the peak of his career. I would be very careful about what to do with Aaron Jones. As far as AJ Dillon is concerned, I feel like he's done a wonderful job with the Packers organization, but it's time to move on. Will he go somewhere else for more money? If he does, good on you, man. I would not bring him back.
Peter, any thoughts?
I think they have to bring him back. I don't think it's a question of whether or not he comes back. It's a question of the terms on which he comes back. I think they move on from AJ Dillon, unless he wants to stay for what's a relatively small cap number. But Aaron Jones's cap number next year is $17.7 million. I don't see any way he plays on that number, but I think you're absolutely right. I think they give him a 3 or 4 or 5 year deal with maybe a year or two at the back end of that deal, so that in essence, he doesn't lose any of that money. It's just spread out. Like you say, he may be 30 this year, but he's pretty much not played this year. You know, it'll end up being 5 or 6 games or whatever it is. So it's not even half of this season. And so I think he's got quite a lot of football left in him. And I think from a Packers perspective anyway, I don't think you can move on from both of your featured backs in 1 year, even if you wanted to. And I think you're right. I think you draft the next guy in round, who knows where, round 3 or round 4, and on you go.
Friends, I just want to let you know that I have done some research for this show. Peter and I briefly talked about this last time, and this might end up being a long episode. In the middle of the night, I wake up and I need to know how many teams play the 3-4 and how many teams play the 4-3 defense in the NFL. So I went through every team, looked through PFF, looked at their base defense. So here's why I'm doing this. I think that teams have figured out the 3-4 and it may be time for teams to move past that and maybe change up what they do, understanding that you don't play a base defense on every down. 20 of the 32 teams in the NFL play the 3-4. 2/3 of the league plays the 3-4 defense as their base defense. So that means 12 teams play the 4-3 as their base defense. Of those 12 teams that play the 4-3, 6 are in the top 10. Half of the teams that play the 4-3 are in the top third of the league. But I just thought it was interesting that the 4-3 has more success relative to the rest of the league. I open it up to you two friends. Any thoughts? I should just go back to sleep in the middle of the night and not get up and look at PFL. Should the Packers play the 4-3? Let's just start there.
We got to do something different. And if it's working for the rest of the league, a larger percent of the league, then we're looking for change anywhere. Do you have the players who have played in that system before? You got to look at that too. I don't know if that's as big of, I mean, I feel like if you get to this level, you should be able to go back and forth between each of those systems. Man, it's really tough. I mean, at this point in the season, I mean, we're going to ride this thing out, right? Like, Joe Barry's not going to get fired. The Packers are still legitimate and in the playoffs.
And I'm not saying right now, let's just be clear, I'm not saying the Packers should switch to a 4-3 defense with 2 games left in the season. I'm not saying that. No. I'm just saying that it might be an option. Peter, 2 questions to you. 1, is the 3-4 played out? Could the Packers do it?
I don't think the 3-4 is played out. These things are cyclical. So we go back to the 1960s. Just about everybody played the 4-3 from the early 60s onwards. Previous to that, you had lots of teams that played 5-man lines. In fact, the Packers played a 5-man line in the 50s. 4-3 became prevalent in the 60s, 70s. The Patriots were pretty much the first team to move to a 3-4 midway through the 1970s. Had success with it. Teams didn't quickly adapt their offense to it. And everybody started switching to the 3-4. You know, the Packers played the 4-3 until 1980. Then they switched to the 3-4. They stayed in the 3-4 until 1994, when they went back to the 4-3 under Fritz Sherman. So these things are really cyclical. So no, I don't think either of the formations will ever go out of fashion, as it were. And I don't think the 3-4 has played out. It is personnel dependent. And that starts up with that nose tackle. And I think you have to have a dominant or close to dominant nose tackle, a guy that can control the center, can control the guards, looks after the A gap or the one gap, if you like. I think you have to have that guy in the 3-4, and then everything else comes off of that. For the Packers, they have the personnel to move to a four-man line, in my view, without any question. And that leaves you Wyatt and Clark as your inside defensive tackles, three technique guys, if you like. You've got a group of big outside linebackers, whether that's Gary, whether that's Smith, whether that's Van Ness, who in my view absolutely could be 4-3 defensive ends because of their size and speed. But those guys are playing at 270, 275. You're not losing anything by having those guys play on the ends. But then you've got to find the right group of linebackers. You've got to have that middle linebacker who, again, if he's not a dominant player, he's got to be a very consistent middle linebacker. And you've got to have outside linebackers in the 4-3 that A, obviously can play the run, but they've got to be able to cover guys. They've got to be able to cover tight ends, and they've got to be able to cover backs. And where you find those guys, I don't think they're there on the Packers roster today. And I think the difficulty the Packers have is they've drafted the type of guys that fit the defense that they've got. It would take a change of drafting philosophy as well as to meet a new based 4-3 defense. I would like to see them certainly think about the 4-3, but I think it's a you know, they need the right personnel to do it.
And that would require a new defensive coordinator from Joe Barry, who said, and I quote, at the end of the game, they had one less point. Now, I've beaten up on Joe Barry, and I promise we're not going way down this road. I will say that no one should be going after his family on Twitter, on Instagram, on social media. Personally, I heard that Joe Barry got hit in the face with a thing of nachos on the way off the field. While funny to me, that's bullshit. I don't have anything against Joe Barry the man. I don't know Joe Barry the man. So I don't want him to be, or his family to be hurt, or verbally hurt. So that's not what this is about. Joe Barry has to be fired at the end of the season. I know we talked about it last week. It's almost like you can't even do press conferences anymore, Joe. Say that he's sick and he's lost his voice or something and not run him out there. LaFleur can't answer a question correctly anymore about the defense. No answer is going to be sufficient. I'll just leave it at that. Joe, when your argument is that we won, that's not a defense of your defense. Let's move on. Peter, the Packers play the Vikings this week. What can you tell us about Packer-Viking history?
It's a series the Packers lead, which is good news. For the longest time, it was really, really tight. But then, you know, through the Aaron Rodgers era, if you want to call it that, the Packers moved ahead in this series. And the Packers lead 65-58-3 in the series, which includes two postseason games. The teams are 1-1 in those two games. But of course, the Packers lost the last game they played earlier this season, the Vikings winning that one 24-10 at Lambeau Field. And in games played in Minnesota, I haven't split these out by the current stadium and then the old Metropolitan Stadium, but in games played at Minnesota, the Vikings lead 31-30. Generally very, very tight in Minnesota. And I guess it's been an interesting series in that, you know, for a lot of the 60s, the Packers won the majority of the games. And then you think through the 70s, the Vikings with the team that went to multiple Super Bowls, the Fran Tarkenton team, the Purple People Eaters and all of that, won the majority of the games in the 70s. And, you know, through the 80s, when the Packers were bad, they actually played pretty well in those games, even in the, you know, in some of the 4-12 seasons, they beat the Vikings. So interesting all-time series. Quite a few players that have played for both teams, the majority of which played for the Packers first before going to the Vikings. Obviously, Brett Favre via the Jets, Ryan Longwell, a number of players. Possibly the best one that's come the other way was Gilbert Brown, drafted by the Vikings and cut by the Vikings and ended up with the Packers and part of that great Super Bowl team in the 90s. So, yeah, good series and pretty tight.
So their coaching staff, Kevin O'Connell, it's funny, and we do this with LaFleur too. I'll just say I do this. It's funny how, like, week to week, how happy the fan base is with the head coach. It really depends on whether they win. Beginning of the season, Kevin O'Connell was going to be fired. The Vikings lost a bunch of games early in the season, and then they went on a really long winning streak, and Kevin O'Connell looks like a freaking genius. Now he's playing with God knows who is the quarterback. I don't care who you are. If you're playing on your third string quarterback, you're getting lucky if you're winning games. I don't know if you can scheme your third quarterback into some Joe Montana. Their defensive coordinator is Brian Flores. That's a guy I wouldn't mind seeing as a Packers defensive coordinator. Mike Pettine, one of Todd's favorite, is the assistant head coach, outside linebackers coach.
How?
I don't know.
Understandably, like, how?
I don't understand the assistant head coach part.
Why? How do you go from, well, he went from, what was he with the Bears? Like a,
he was like, he was just like the special assistant, like Dom Capers, right?
He was a nothing. He didn't even actually have a
coaching
position. Man. Oh my God.
Assistant head coach. Wow.
Wow. Maybe him and Barry can get together and have some beers.
During the game?
Yeah, during the game. I fucked this place up before you. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm fucking it up even further than you did. Okay, great. Oh,
and you still have a job. Good job.
Yeah, fuck yeah. So do I. Yeah, this is great.
It's kind of a strange oddity, isn't it, that you play last week against the Panthers, who had Dom Capers as a special assistant, your defensive coordinator, two ago. And then this week you play against your previous defensive coordinator. That's odd.
It is odd. Mike Pettine is he going to go to Detroit next? Because he was with the Bears.
These teams just employing these guys for 1 week for when they play against the Packers.
Get the game plan. Like, they need that. Other coaches you'll recognize, Keenan McCardle. Really good wide receiver in his prime, is the wide receivers coach working with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Wasn't Mike Smith a Packers coach? He is the outside linebackers / pass rush specialist. Now it's coming to me. Why did the Packers let him go to a lateral position move? That's really kind of strange to me. Because if I remember right, wasn't Mike Smith a rah-rah guy too? Like more of a fiery dude? We could use a couple more of those fucking guys on the sideline. No other coaches that I know of that are worth mentioning. Peter, are there any current Packers that were on the Vikings roster that you can think of? It's not Corey Ballantyne, is it?
No, but is Dean Lowry still on the Vikings roster?
He is. So Vikings that were on the Packers roster. I did put in the notes. Probable shitless player Dean Lowry is on the Vikings roster. It's not,
correction. No probable.
Now, I don't want to give away your whole team. That's the only reason I said probable.
Well, that's fine. But no, there's no probable. I'll reveal that one right now.
Okay.
That's done.
Breaking news. And it's not breaking news if you've ever listened to this show. It will not surprise you that Dean Lowry is 112th out of 129 interior defensive linemen in PFF.
Imagine that.
Shocking. Former Badgers on the roster, Troy Fumagalli, former tight end for the Badgers, is on the Vikings roster as of right now. Might be because TJ Hockenson is out with injury. Peter, the Vikings draft was very small this year. They only had like 6 or 7 draft picks, if I'm not mistaken. Is there a guy that you love?
There isn't one that I love. I mean, I liked Addison. I liked Addison coming out, and he went wherever it was in the draft. He was 19th on my board and went roughly around that spot.
Yep, 23rd pick in the draft.
And I thought that was about, you know, like I say, the right kind of era. And I liked Addison in college at Pittsburgh and at USC. And they needed a wide receiver as well. It was a position of need, having lost, you know, Thielen and Diggs in recent years. I think that was a nice pick, and he's done pretty well in his rookie season. I guess it helps to play opposite Justin Jefferson. But yeah, Addison was a nice pick. And I thought the interesting one later on was Jaren Hall, the quarterback out of BYU, because I thought that he was a possible Packers pick. Right, so the Packers ended up with Sean Clifford. But I always thought that Jaren Hall or Clayton Toon out of Houston would be potential Packers. Again, he's a little bit undersized. He's 6'1". But yeah, I quite like that pick. He was 152 on my board, so we went roughly around where he should have done. And he may well play against the Packers this week. I'm not quite sure who's starting at quarterback for the Vikings this week, but yeah, those two were the ones that kind of stood out to me.
Kevin O'Connell did say that all three quarterbacks are in play. It could be Dobbs, it could be Hall, and it could be Nick Mullins. 411 yards against Detroit. That means if he plays, he'll have like 654 yards passing against the Packers. On defense, I don't know. As I look at this roster, Peter, now Brian Flores must be doing something. Mekhi Blackmon is in their starting lineup right now. He is actually 16th in PFF out of 123 corners. Does that surprise you?
It does, actually. I think he's played better than I kind of had him graded, if you like, coming into the draft. So, yeah, it does surprise me a little bit.
I know I just skipped over their entire offense. Let me go backwards. We're talking about the draft picks. Justin Jefferson, probably the best wide receiver in all of football, at least in my mind. KJ Osborne, not great. Todd, who scares you on the offensive side of the ball besides Justin Jefferson? Is there anyone else?
No, I don't think so. Jefferson coming back changes the dynamic of the offense. I think that's what we have to be focused on ultimately. I don't see anything else. But then again, we're running a Joe Barry defense. So,
Peter, anyone else we should be looking out for offensively?
Not for me, not with Hockenson out. I think the concern is, it's an obvious concern, is I just don't know how you stop Jefferson. Teams that have lined up and stopped him, that double covered him, that have gone with bracket coverage, that have gone with cover two, whatever, nobody stops him. Other than when he's been injured this season, he's dominant.
You can only hope to contain him. We have to throw the Chris Berman in there and just contain Justin Jefferson. Don't let him score three touchdowns or go over 200 yards receiving, and you feel like you probably won if he doesn't do that. On the defensive side of the ball, Danielle Hunter is probably their best player. Harrison Smith is still around. I feel like he's been playing for, I don't know, 99 years. They got rid of Patrick Peterson, and they really didn't have a bunch of answers for him. Their other edge rusher is Pat Jones. Pat Jones has the worst PFF grade of all edge rushers in the NFL. That feels good. Maybe Rashid Walker will have a great game. Danielle Hunter usually lines up on the left. Bodes well for the Packers if Zach Tom can play well this week. They gave up 30 to the Lions. Their defense is kind of struggling a bit. They all feel like wins. And then we play like we play. What else? Their special teams is okay. Right in the middle of the pack. Nobody great. Greg Joseph is fine. Peter, I'm just going to say this, and I said this last week. The Packers defense has now dropped one other spot to 23rd in PFF. I'm hoping that they can at least stay at 23rd after this week, which means that maybe we're going to win this football game. Maybe they've stopped someone.
I think you have two statistics on defense, right? Points per game isn't one of them, because points per game isn't a reflection of defensive points per game given up, right? It doesn't account for special teams and offensive touchdowns given up and all of that. But yards per game over the course of a season is a pretty good measure. And the other one is turnovers. The Packers defense has 6 interceptions this season through 15 games, which is in the bottom 2 or 3 in the league. It's one thing bending and not breaking. You have to turn the ball over, even more so this week, because without those turnovers, again, I'm repeating myself, but I don't know how you stop Justin Jefferson. I don't know how you do it. And jumping about, you mentioned Danielle Hunter. That guy, whatever else is going on the Vikings defense, has 15 and a half sacks this year. 15 and a half sacks.
It shouldn't be a one-man wrecking show, but it might be. At least he lines up on the side that I like him to line up. But yeah, I don't even know what to say from week to week. Like, I don't have this feeling of complete gloom or dread, but I also have no idea what's going to happen week to week anymore. Like, if you're a bettor, how can you even touch the Packers? They didn't cover last week. Again, I think they've been over the under over most of the time, partly because they give up a lot of points. Do we just move on to a score prediction here? The Vikings are 1.5-point favorites at home. The over under is 46.5. Who's going first this week? Todd, you'll go first. All right, sir. Let's do it.
I hate to bring negativity right back into it. I really do. I think they lose. And I think it's 23-20. That would be the under.
Yeah. Okay. Peter, would you like to go next, or would you want me to go?
Hatefully say that.
So for me, the Packers' chance of winning this game relies on getting pressure on the quarterback. And we don't know who's playing quarterback for the Vikings, but none of them are Kirk Cousins, right? So I think it relies on the Packers getting pressure to stopping the passing game at source. That is the one chance of winning this game. I, unfortunately, don't think that they can do it for long enough in this game. I think that the Vikings win this game 27-20. I think the Packers pretty much score between 20 and 30 points every week, so I think they'll reach that. I just don't see them stopping Jefferson and Addison for long enough. I don't see them getting enough pressure on the quarterback. So Vikings 27, and that pains me. It breaks my heart to say that, because my heart says the Packers will win, but my head says 27-20 Vikings.
I think the only reason the Packers are even close to being in this game is because they are starting one of three backups. I hope that it's not Josh Dobbs. I know that sounds crazy, but a guy that can move out of the pocket is going to give the Packers fits. I hope it's Mullins. He turned the ball over a bunch of times in this game. I'm going to go with that. He does start, and I think the Packers win 29-24. Meatball is going to miss a kick or two here and there. Packers are going to have to go for two. I don't want to pick like 27 because that would mean he either made two field goals or missed an extra point. I feel it's going to be some weird number. So I'm going to say the Packers win and they go over the 46.5. Scoregami.
Jesus.
All right. So thanks for listening to episode 154 of the Average Cheese Podcast.
Go Petco.
Go Petco.
Petco.